Thanks to newly redrawn congressional maps, we've already had one heck of a battle royale in Congressional District 1 in Alabama. Well, now we're going into a runoff in Congressional District 2 with a battle royale between Caroline Dobson and Dick Brubaker. Today, we're bringing on Caroline to tell her story and what she will do if she wins. We have an incredible culture here in the state of Alabama, but our politics and public policy don't reflect the people of Alabama. Media drives culture. Culture is what drives politics and public policy. Welcome, everyone, to 1819 News, the podcast. I'm Brian Dawson, CEO of 1819 News and host of this here podcast, where we are in pursuit of a free and flourishing Alabama every single week. Got a really good episode for you guys this week. We're bringing on a candidate for the newly redrawn second congressional district in the state of Alabama. There's a runoff between Caroline Dobson, who joins us today, and Dick Brubaker. So we're bringing on Caroline to tell her story and kind of go through why is she running? What is she going to get accomplished? Talk some policy issues. And then we're going to do an overtime segment where we discuss Alabama history. So Caroline, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Before we go into the podcast, though, I want to tell you guys, if you are not signed up for the newsletter, you are missing out. So the 1819 newsletter was created because social media hates our guts. And because of that, we had to have distribution and dissemination that would work. And lo and behold, we found a very simple way of doing that with the email newsletter. We have at least 10,000 people every single day that get up and check that. And that's driving the news cycle in the state. I always laugh and kind of joke and say two things happen, especially during legislative session at 5:45 in the morning. Legislators are on their knees praying that they're not in the newsletter, and all the radio show hosts that prepare their show are getting up and checking the newsletter to figure out what they're going to talk about. And so if you're not signed up for that, you're missing out. Go to the website, 1819news.com, click the subscribe button. Put in your email. We will not charge you a dime nor sell your information to China. We'll keep that in-house, and you will receive that newsletter every morning at 5:45. So without further ado, let's jump right in. So I think you were, I don't know if the words dark horse, underdog, outsider. I'd not heard your name coming into this. I think the first time I heard you was on Joey Clark's show, and I was just like, wow, she's really sharp. Jeff told me he had you, Jeff Poore, on the radio show, and he's like, she's really sharp. And so hearing you be able to articulate policy and the passion and all of these things, I was really impressed. And I'm not going to brag, but Super Tuesday that morning, I said it's going to be a runoff between Dick Brubaker and Caroline Dobson. Just saying, predicted it.
Thank you for the vote of confidence.
Absolutely.
I'll take all those titles, dark horse, underdog. I think that's what America is about. The colonists were dark horses and underdogs. Yeah. But yes, until November 1st, I was a totally private citizen, wife, mom, lawyer, grew up on a farm in Monroe County. I went to high school in Monroeville. I got into Harvard. I wrote my college essay about being a rodeo queen, and got into Harvard, where I was a proud member of the Harvard Republican Club. There were about 15 of us. But there's nothing like being in that sort of environment to make you kind of drill down on your conservative beliefs, have to stand up for your belief in God, and really understand why you believe in limited government. Woke wasn't a word. We were kind of in a proto woke era there. Even when I was at Harvard, the campus implemented Meatless Mondays, which as a beef producer was incredibly offensive and, had more to do with their budget than, but of course they were virtue signaling that this was, some sort of, green initiative. But anyway, it just really opened my eyes up to how a lot of the country is unfortunately trending kind of towards this liberal indoctrination and the suppression of free speech on our college campuses. So after Harvard, I purposely sought out a more conservative law school. I always wanted to go to law school. So I went to Baylor Law School in Texas, and I practiced law in Texas for a few years. I met my husband there. But then when it came time to try to start a family, I wanted to be back in Alabama. So I now split my time between Montgomery, where I practice real estate law and serve on the Alabama Forestry Commission, and then Monroe County, where my parents still farm. We have a cattle and timber operation there in North Monroe County. So I'm really, really grateful to have been raised in the district. That made me who I am, the values of work ethic and humility. And then also I'm so proud to be raising my daughters in the district, but I want them to have opportunities. And I think we've got incredible natural resources. We have some of the best people in the world in District 2. We've got to have leaders that are focused on standing up for the right and delivering results to the people of Alabama.
Sure. So the Harvard thing has always intrigued me about going to Harvard and then kind of experiencing the proto woke mm-hmm. and then seeing some of the stuff. Did you have any resistance efforts that you had at Harvard? This is just interesting to me because I'm thinking about what it would be like to be in that environment.
Yeah, no. I mean, you really, you know, certainly, you know, also I'm so grateful to have grown up in Monroe County where the question was not, do you believe in God or why believe in God? It was like, are you Baptist or Methodist? You know, that was, and church and youth group was cool. And, you know, I'm so grateful to have grown up that way. But then you get to Harvard, and I think Harvard's most recent, they have a chaplain on campus who's atheist. You know, explain that. Yeah. So I really had to defend my faith. It also kind of coincided with Tim Keller coming on the scene, and I had read the writings of C.S. Lewis, but Tim Keller was also I mean, God certainly. I discovered Tim Keller at the Harvard bookstore of all places, and that was, I'm so grateful for that. And then I found a community of believers. Again, there weren't many of us, but but it was good for me because it forged my beliefs and also just kind of opened my eyes to the fact that, you know, there are certainly evil liberals out there. And then there are also overeducated, ignorant liberals out there who think that the solution to any problem is another rule. Yeah. And that we live in a society where everyone follows rules and everyone thinks logically and, you know, again, more government is better. Sure. So, you know, So in Cambridge, there you have to have a permit to carry pepper spray.
Yeah.
And yet my last week of senior year, there was a shooting on Harvard's campus in my dorm.
Wow.
It was a drug deal gone bad. And one of the students, I mean, it was a student who was doing a drug deal with these two people, the shooter and the shooting, neither of which went to Harvard, but one got shot on campus and died, and they apprehended the shooter. And one of my roommates, who was third generation Harvard, you know, gone to the fanciest prep school in the Northeast, called her dad to say, hey, there was a shooting in our dorm, but we're all okay. You know, we were all doing that with our parents. And her father said, oh, Rebecca, you that can't have happened. You must be mistaken. And she said, no, I mean, we heard the shots and we, you know, we saw it. And he said, well, but guns are illegal in Cambridge. That can't have happened.
Gosh.
You know, and that just is a perfect example of the fact that, you know, there are a lot of liberals out there that, you know, that they want a safe country too, but they think the solution is more government. And that, you know, and I could tell you growing up in rural Monroe County that just because there's a gun law on the books doesn't mean anyone's going to follow it. And and that, again, ingrained in me, you know, I've always had an appreciation for our Second Amendment rights, but really, really painted in stark relief the fact that gun laws only hurt law-abiding citizens.
Amen. So one last thing on Harvard before we move on. One of the things that I find interesting is, I call it the Long March of the Institutions. Mm-hmm. But Harvard was a Christian institution created by Puritans for the glory of God and the teaching of his word and applying all of Christ to all of life.
Mm.
And now.
Yeah, now here we are.
Yeah.
But, you know, they've been headed on this track for longer than we realize. I was reading recently that even, you know, in the 20s, there was some blatant anti-Semitism at a lot of the Ivies. They had quotas on the number of Jewish students. And what's interesting is President Denny at the University of Alabama started taking out ads in a lot of magazines in the Northeast and saying, okay, well, if you're being discriminated against, or you're not guaranteed a spot that you should be entitled to based on your academics in schools, and then come to the University of Alabama. And so he was actively recruiting students that were being discriminated against in the Northeast to the University of Alabama. And I think by the the early 1950s, there were two Jewish fraternities.
Yeah.
Because he had made those efforts. So again, I think Alabama, the legislature was the first to support, the state of Israel, back in 1943, I think, before the end of World War II. So, so I think that's, something we don't brag enough about in Alabama.
Sandy Stimson's got a really cool Israel story. If you ever get a chance to ask him about it, Mobile, and anyway, it's a whole deal. Richard told me about it, but worth asking. But moving on. So the one of the ways I see things is, you know, if I was a politician, what would I want to communicate? In order to start 1819, I had to communicate, you know, what's wrong with the world? Mm-hmm. What are you going to do about it? Mm-hmm. What does it look like if you win? What does it look like if you lose?
Yes. No. Well, I mean, I think, you know, in just about every possible way, our country is headed in the wrong direction. Biden is unquestionably the worst president we've ever had, and the weakest leader that we've ever had. And that's evident in just, you know, the rise of Iran, Russia, China. You know, first and foremost, we have to be strong again. And Joey Clark actually asked me the other day, well, are you a dove or are you a hawk? Well, I believe in deterrence.
Yeah.
And when we are strong, we can deter. I'm not saying that we stick our fingers in every single altercation that's going on throughout the globe, but I'm not saying that, you know, that we, are isolationists, but when we're strong, we don't really have to be either. So first of all, it's American strength. We've got to secure our border. We've got to close our border. We've got to take unprecedented efforts to send everyone that's here illegally back home, and build the wall, enforce the stay in Mexico policy. And then we've got to focus on our economy too. I mean, inflation is killing families like mine. I'm a family of four. You think and imagine that you're going to budget and set aside monies for college and this and that. But when the average cost of living for a family of four has increased by $950 a month just since Biden took office, you know, you're using your kids' college funds to just pay for groceries. We've got to fix the economy. That's deregulation. That's cutting taxes, balancing the budget. And also something that we can do really immediately is become energy independent again. We were energy independent under Trump. It's not just the price of gas. It's also, again, for ag producers like my family, for manufacturers, it's the cost of diesel and fertilizer. That would have a tremendous impact on lowering the cost of goods and transportation. That would kind of have almost an immediate impact on our on the budgets of the average American family.
Sure.
And the fact too, that when we're not energy independent, we're actively funding bad actors. We're actively paying for Venezuela's invasion of Guyana. You know, I mean, that's who we're paying, when we are not energy independent.
Mm. So there's some, what's wrong with the world. What would you do to solve it? If you got elected, and that kind of ties into what does it look like if Caroline wins, what does she do? And I would be interested in even like what committees would you see yourself going on between judiciary or ag, or like where you kind of see that? But
right. I'll work in backwards order. The committees, I would definitely be interested in appropriations.
Yeah.
In agriculture, given my background and also given the makeup of this district, and then also defense. You know, we've got Maxwell Air Force Base, the Air National Reserve, also Danley Field in Montgomery. We've got Lockheed Martin in Troy, Austell in Airbus in Mobile. So this, and given how far we are lagging behind in shipbuilding and just overall the production of materiel in our country, I think this district plays a huge role in being able to catch up from the defense standpoint. So appropriations, defense, agriculture, natural resources is also of interest. The Mobile River Delta is the Amazon of the United States. Have so much biodiversity there. So there are a lot of options there, but those are, you know, kind of, my top three priorities plus an honorable mention, natural resources there. As far as my, legislative priorities, you know, first and foremost, I think we have to, it's killing our manufacturers in this district and also our ag producers and just small businesses, the overregulation. We have to scale back the regulatory state. The Trump administration in 2020 issued the Regulatory Bill of Rights, which got virtually no media coverage by the mainstream media, but was a huge win for the average citizen, for the small business owner, as far as establishing a burden of proof for all agency proceedings, establishing rules of evidence for all agency proceedings, which helps all individuals, all small business owners, regardless of your political persuasion, you know. And the thing is, you and I are far more likely to be the target of, you know, violating some agency rule that, you know, may or may not apply to us than we are to be, you know, accused of a felony. And the fact that the average American citizen, small business owner, does not have basic protections, that is long overdue. And we cannot rely, of course, the Biden administration revoked that executive order within 40 days in office. So we cannot rely on the executive branch to limit its own power. And then we also cannot be in a situation where, depending on the administration, your rights vary. So that would be, again, it's not the sexiest topic, but it's one that's hugely important to me. And that would be one of my top legislative priorities.
And I think something that's happening is that politicians used to be able to get away with trope talking points that were just like, you know, rah, rah.
Right.
I think everything from truckers who sit and listen to podcasts all day long to all kinds of average people are so much more informed now, and they're beginning to see how some of these unregulated, like, you know, agencies that are unelected basically create their own laws and have their own enforcement and all this other stuff. And they're watching Trump get, you know, arrested and get his, I mean, just all the stuff that's going on. And so while, maybe 2 years ago, 4 years ago, 6 years ago, that might've been, you know, is sexy. I think people now are like, no, we need to do something to restrict this out of control federal government.
Right. Right. Well, you mentioned truckers. One in 13 jobs in Alabama is trucking or trucking related. And they're often the brunt of so many regulations. Truckers are still, and trucking companies, there's still a federal excise tax of 12% on the purchase of any new heavy duty commercial vehicles that was put in place after World War One to pay for the cost of World War One. And, you know, and that should be eliminated entirely. I mean, that's long out. And that would allow our there's so many trucking companies based in District 2 to upgrade their equipment, buy new equipment, provide more on-the-job training, provide better benefits to our truckers, which, again, I think, if anything, COVID should have opened our eyes to the fact that we owe so much to our truckers, and they're often unsung heroes. Another, you know, area of regulation for the average new home built in America, over 27% of the costs of that are just related to complying with federal regulations. So, you know, if we're talking about, again, families like mine that are trying to buy a home, you know, you're looking at almost a third of the cost of a new home. You're trying, you know, your first home, trying to buy your first home is directly related to federal regulations, not the cost of materials, but the cost of just complying with a lot of arbitrary regulations.
Sure. So, something that's really taken up a lot of bandwidth about every campaign trail across the country this election cycle is Trump. one of the things that, you know, I think he's come back around, your opponent, Dick Brubaker, has, you know, criticized Trump pretty, you know, clearly and, you know, publicly, but again, but even, and I'll, to his credit, before he knew he was going to run for Congress, he did start to come back around, but has criticized him. Where are you on Donald Trump? What are your thoughts about him as the next president?
Oh, I'm solidly behind President Trump, and we've got to get President Trump back in the White House. And that's why it's very important that the, you know, we've got to also keep control of the House. That's why this race is so pivotal. You know, there's just a few races nationally, House races, that are going to determine control of the House. So it's very important that District 2 not only sends a Republican, but a Republican that can work with President Trump, a Republican who hasn't been openly critical of him, who can, you know, we've got to unify, because we have got to scale back all the harm that the Biden administration has done. It's really unimaginable. I think, you know, 3 years ago, if you'd asked me, could it be this bad? I wouldn't have imagined. I certainly would not have imagined the state of our border and the influx of the, you know, 8 million folks that have come across the border. But the Republican Party has to unify and has to unify behind Trump and work together to, again, scale back, because it's going to take unprecedented efforts on so many levels to scale back all of the damage that the Biden administration has done to this country.
Yeah, it's crazy. So you having an agricultural background with, you know, that community really behind you, one of the things that kind of departs, I think, in that community from standard principled conservatism is the immigration argument. And so right. one of the questions that I hear a lot of is, well, where is she going to be on immigration? Sounds like you're not for military age men crossing the border by the tens of thousands every day. Is that right?
That's right. Right. No, we need to close the border and send everyone home and build the wall. But they're two, you know, they're two kind of totally separate issues. Yeah. So I was recently in Sims, outside of Mobile, which is in the district, and it's home to over 100 nurseries. And so they use a lot of migrant workers, but they use the H-2A program. A lot of folks in the timber industry in this district use the H-2B program. Those are both so heavily regulated. And again, you know, the executive agencies are just ready and willing to pounce on any failure to comply with a certain form or, you know, a certain regulation. Meanwhile, our southern border is flung open. Yeah. So we've got to, we have to close our southern border, send everyone home, enforce sustained Mexico policy. But at the same time, we need to overhaul and streamline the H-2A and H-2B programs because that's
Can
what
you
our...
Tell me about H-2A, H-2B.
Yes. Yeah, so H-2A is commonly utilized by farm. It's farm migrant worker. It's a seasonal worker program. H-2B is a similar program, migrant worker program that's often utilized by the timber industry for planting trees.
Is it like green card citizenship?
Yeah, no, it's not citizenship. It is just a seasonal migrant worker program. Okay. So they come here. They cannot stay here full. They're not full annual employees. They can come during a specific period of time. But the wages are set very arbitrarily. For instance, the H-2B program, the average hourly wage that has to be paid to an H-2B worker is higher in South Alabama than it is in South Georgia. You know, and it's again mandated by the federal government. H-2A program workers, their minimum wage is twice that of Americans' minimum wage. And then if you have them drive any sort of vehicle on your farm, which you probably need them to drive a truck from here to there to feed cows or to, you know, then you have to pay them about $23 an hour. So again, it's over, you know, the wage hike is just kind of astronomical, sure. compared to, you know, what the American citizen is getting. And then, at the same time, there's so much paperwork and bureaucracy. You have to provide housing, and you have to provide housing at a certain point. There are so many hoops to jump through. It makes it so hard for our ag producers and those in the timber industry. And they're constantly getting slapped on the wrist and fined for not filling out this form or, you know, not having a trailer in place the week before the workers are supposed to be there, even though they would, you know, they have to provide housing and they want to provide housing. But sometimes it's a matter of, you know, because these are migrant workers, getting mobile homes in place in time. And they have to, anyway, I could really get in the weeds here, but it's overly regulated. And the sad thing is, you know, we are, you know, again, harming and fining our ag producers who are trying to comply with this draconian system. Meanwhile, we have our southern borders flung open and, you know, we have criminals, like the guy that killed Lakin Riley that are just roaming free that have been apprehended and released constantly. So if you're a criminal coming across the southern border, you're likely, to have a much easier go than an Alabama farmer who's trying to employ a migrant worker who wants to be here for, the migrant workers want to be here for the right reasons. They want to make money and send it home and then go home. So they're, you know, on the one hand, we have got to close the border. On the other hand, we've got to streamline the migrant worker program.
Sure. So you're saying that the federal government is making it hard on businesses?
Yes.
It's weird. Can you imagine?
Right. Well, that was actually the written when Biden revoked the regulatory Bill of Rights executive order. He said it was, quote, too burdensome on federal agencies.
Oh, wow.
You're like, oh, those poor those federal agencies. Yeah,
those poor guys. Well, and you know, as you describe, and again, just 30,000 foot objective, not tinfoil hat Alex Jones, just like objective. Okay, let's just look at this. How hard they're making this, like you just described for the immigration, yet the border is ripped wide open, military age men crossing by the tens of thousands, you know, and it almost seems like people are trying to destroy our country intentionally.
Oh, absolutely. No, without doubt. You know, we are going to collapse from the inside if this continues. And that's what, you know, people again ask, you know, is this, you know, what's your priority? Well, the border is first and foremost my priority. I hope that we have some sort of solution before I'm sworn in January. I mean, yeah. I hope and pray because it's getting worse by the day. And we cannot afford really another day of thousands coming across our border. Yet the Biden administration, you know, refuses. And again, you know, the idea that this requires congressional action is ludicrous. With one executive order, he could definitely take an affirmative step to to solving this crisis.
Trade, I guess international trade, regular trade. What do you kind of see economically and within trade that you would like to see happen?
Yes. Well, again, I think, this is where my, upbringing in a small town, I think is really important because on both sides of the aisle, I think we've got too many folks in Washington who have no concept of what it's like to live in rural America, to live in a small town, to understand that trade policies can, you know, while they can maybe hurt a city, they can really kill a town. And so I'm from Monroe County. We used to have Vanity Fair, a booming textile industry throughout Southwest Alabama, and NAFTA killed that. And because, you know, it killed that one employer, our public schools went down. Our, you know, our hospital is struggling. Last year, Monroe County Hospital had to shut down its maternity ward. So women in that area have to drive 70 or 80 miles just to have prenatal care and deliver a baby. I think it's really important that we have folks focused on free and fair trade. And again, understanding how a lot of the industries within this district impact their local communities. Washington County, for instance, so much manufacturing there. It's a huge, huge employer, and it's a very rural area. So if we were to lose one of those plants, it would have a devastating impact on the community. And in Washington County, there are 5 public schools there. So, you know, it could have, a really negative impact, and it's a chain reaction. Sure. So I think, again, having someone that's, you know, certainly cognizant of all the opportunities that Mobile and Montgomery, which are both in this district, have to provide, but also at the same time aware that, you know, one policy decision can really devastate or create opportunities in a small community.
That's really good. I'd not thought about the effect on the hospitals and the prenatal care and all that stuff. Wow. This one is the one that is probably, you know, we talk about like the topics that are, you know, everyone's paying attention to and focused on is the weaponization of three-lettered agencies. We kind of talked about a little bit, like, you know, but I'm talking like IRS, FBI, CIA, you know, DOJ.
Right.
We're seeing that at an all-time high. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes. Well, I mean, that's, you know, I think they go kind of hand in hand with, you know, people are saying, oh, well, we've got to balance the budget. Where does that money come from? Well, it doesn't come from taxes. And I am the only Republican. I was the only Republican of the primary field, and remain the only Republican who has signed a pledge never to vote for an increase in federal taxes. And I firmly believe that we can balance the budget by cutting government spending. And one way is cutting funding to a lot of these three-letter organizations. I mean, $30 billion Biden wants $30 billion to allow for more enforcement opportunities for the IRS, which has been shown to target conservative groups. So that's certainly one source of funding is to cut a lot of these fundings and really evaluate how they're being implemented and used against certain citizens, especially conservative citizens.
Sure. So, I had a friend that came on the podcast. He was a Department of Homeland Security guy, and you know, long, illustrious career of putting away bad guys, taking down cartels and sex trafficking and all this stuff. And so you're talking about like 25 years of like doing God's work in this agency. And then like one of his last meetings was the reason he left is they're like, all right, guys, so there's this kind of these hubbubs going on at these school board meetings and these parents are causing problems and we need you to keep an eye on them. And he's just like, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Retire.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what's happening is that, you know, these apparatuses were created when there was clear moral distinctions about what was right and wrong.
Right.
And they were there and they were good and they protected our people by arresting bad people who were doing legitimately objective bad things. But now, because these agencies, this is Brian Dawson speaking, agencies have been hijacked by, you know, Marxists that hate our country. Mm-hmm. Now people like you and me are the target.
Targets, exactly.
Right? And that's scary.
No, it's terrifying. And I mean, you know, we're, I think that's the distinction between when you look at the globe right now, it looks like a lot like it did right before World War II, sadly. And that's a distinction, you know, between then and now. You know, certainly the country was divided politically then, but there still was a common morality. There was a common unity in believing that freedom was good and that America was the greatest force for good in the world. And that's what's that's what kind of causes me to lose sleep at night. That if, you know, if we are in the face of global warfare, are we unified just in our basic principles? Sure. You know, maybe not unified in Republican, Democrat, but are we unified in a common sense of purpose? And I don't think that we are.
Yeah.
I think again we've been infiltrated by Marxism, and then also there's so many people that are just apathetic, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Even though we've never had more access to information.
Yeah, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Two more questions. So some of the social issues, and I don't even know that they're necessarily social and only in nature. They become economic and they become everything. Mm-hmm. It's just the way that things work. But some of the issues that we're dealing with at the state level and then at the national level is critical race theory, LGBTQ. Mm-hmm. It's the alphabet thing, CRT, LGBT, DEI, ESG,
right.
And, basically any, you know, ATF, FBI, IRS, anytime you put letters together like that, I'm just like, no, but specifically let's talk about, those are the kind of Marxist agenda items, socialist agenda items, as far as critical race theory, the effect that that's having, ESG, DEI, the effect that that's having. And then finally, just the assault on traditional values and marriage through the LGBTQ stuff.
Right. No. I'm very proud of our state legislature for passing the bill prohibiting public universities to use state funding for DEI. Because I think, you know, again, it's what was going on at Harvard's campus is appalling. But at the same time, you know, Auburn and Alabama each were spending millions of dollars on DEI themselves. And you look at the ostensibly, you know, DEI is ostensibly to encourage marginalized students. But you look at the populations of those universities. Auburn, less than 6% of its student population is Black. Alabama, less than 13% of its student population is Black. Troy University, $0 in DEI. And 32% of its population is Black. So, it's been shown over and over that DEI actually breeds resentment and insecurity. It does not foster unity. It does not actually include the people that ostensibly it's trying to include. Yeah. And also, all of these DEI officers, their salaries are just astronomical. It's crazy. So I'm really proud of the state legislature for banning. And I assume Governor Ivey will be signing that into law soon. So, and hopefully more states, will kind of take up that mantle. I would love to see, the Department of Education federal Department of Education drastically reduced.
Ended in my opinion.
Yes, ended. Yeah, no, I mean, as long as there is some way to protect girls' sports, if we do away with the Department of Education, but somehow have some sort of apparatus to prohibit the instruction of critical race theory throughout the country, and then also ensure that girls' sports are just for girls.
Yeah.
Because you know that the average federal Department of Education employee makes over $100,000, twice what the average Alabama teacher makes. Yeah. You know, so those federal dollars should be going to the states. And again, you know, as I was saying earlier, if we have any hope of you know, if there is a, you know, a World War III, we've got to be unified, and critical race theory does nothing, but pin, you know, division and sow discord, you know, tell kindergartners that they're oppressed or they're the oppressor. So, we cannot be unified in protecting America and saving our country if we allow, you know, critical race theory to continue to be taught in our schools.
Yeah. What about, ESG and then the LGBTQ stuff that we're seeing?
Yes. No. I mean, ESG also is just, it's such a farce. I would love to entirely repeal the Green New Deal. If you look at Alabama and specifically this district, the timber industry actually is a sustainable industry. It's the definition of sustainability. And I think, you know, we, but again, it's, you know, as with DEI, it is just so narrowly defined to, you know, promote a certain liberal agenda. But I would love to see all renewable energy projects that are being subsidized by the federal government, that funding to be cut, and actually, you know, take some action that would promote our timber industry. For instance, we don't have a reliable system of casualty loss deduction for taxes. If, you know, and timber owners don't have crop insurance. Generally, the timber industry wants to be left alone.
Yeah.
So deregulating the timber industry would be a way to actually support a sustainable industry without any government funding.
Yeah.
And then there's never been a greater desire for wood products. I mean, I think regardless of where you are in the political spectrum, you understand that using a, you know, a wooden fork or a paper straw is better. You know, I don't love paper straws, but as a timber owner, but you know, but anyway, I mean, we all understand that those are good things, and the timber industry is not asking for handouts. We just want to be left alone. And the new EPA particulate matter and the air regulation would be devastating. The EU's deforestation policy, we have to fight that. So there's a lot that we can actually do for our environment that is actually counter to all the ESG agenda. And then with respect to the, you know, LGBTQ, we have got to ensure, you know, that girls' sports are protected, that sexuality is not discussed. You know, I it's just, it's in the ways in which it is so pervasive. I mean, the other day I was, one of my friends sent me a picture of this book that her kid had come home from school with about a red crayon that thought it was a blue crayon. And it was seemingly innocuous, and it's a book about crayons. And then she's looking at it and saying, I think, is this disturbing to you? And I said, maybe just not toss that book. But we have got to, again, just restore the American childhood. You know, we need to be teaching about morals and ethics and then STEM and reading, and focus on, you know, here we have our enemies, China. They're teaching their children how to code and how to solve complex math problems and how to build things. And we're having, you know, we're pulling hairs and having all these really complicated arguments about things we should not be exposing, you know, elementary age kids to. So it's, I'm sure that it's delighting some of our enemy nations that we are splitting hairs over these discussions. Meanwhile, they're actually teaching their kids how to do things.
Yeah. And on that note, you talked about, it's not about being a hawk or a dove. It's about strong and peace through strength, not necessarily peace through intervention strength. You know, men in dresses that are, you know, like admirals and things like that, probably not putting the fear of God into China and Russia. Just throwing that out there.
Right. So, well, no, and that's why I mean, I think our military morale is as low as it's been because, and I heard this, you know, from an officer that was a friend during the Obama administration, but the military feels that they're being used as guinea pigs by the administration. And, you know, whether it's, you know, all of the, well, you know, like you were talking about all the, you know, trying to recruit trans members or the vaccine mandate. You know, we lost 8,000 troops because of the vaccine mandate. And then when the Biden administration pivoted and said you can reenlist, less than 50 of those 8,000 have reenlisted.
Sure.
Because, you know, here they are. Also, I think we've got to have clear and simple rules of engagement. I think we're allowing bureaucrats to Monday morning quarterback what happens out in the field. And if you want a strong defense, they've got to have, they can't be second guessing themselves about, well, can I protect myself? Can I protect those in my platoon? Or am I going to be accused of a war crime after this? So we've got to also give them the equipment and technology they need. And we've been lagging far behind that. Again, as I said earlier, this district is key to you know, enabling us to catch up. But in so many ways, we've got to do a better job of supporting our military. I mean, I think it's estimated that, you know, a little under $50 million was spent in renaming the forts. And I'm sure it was more than that.
Yeah.
You know, my law firm just rebranded and that was in the six figures to redo the logo. So I have to imagine renaming, and, you know, it's like, did that actually improve the quality of life of our fighting men and women?
No.
You know, I mean, couldn't we have used that money and given them all a raise?
Yeah.
You know? I think we've got to restore trust with our military members.
Amen. All right. Last question. What separates you from Dick Brubaker, your opponent?
Well, first and foremost, I'm the true conservative. My opponent, as I mentioned earlier, I'm the only candidate who has signed the Americans for Tax Reform pledge, pledging to never vote to increase your federal taxes. That pledge has also been signed by all Republican members of the Alabama delegation.
Yeah.
And Mr. Brubaker voted for the largest tax increase in Alabama history, an amendment that was later voted down by 67% of the Alabama population. He's been vocally supportive of a property tax increase in Montgomery County. He's voted for increases for taxes on hospitals. Just as significantly, during his term in the state legislature, for 23 key conservative votes, he didn't show up. Mm. Didn't show up to vote. And I think the people of Alabama need someone who's going to show up for them. I think that's what people are tired of. They're tired of career politicians who are, you know, motivated by their special interest groups or motivated by their egos. They want someone who is advocating for them. And I've been out in this district. I have been in every county, been in so many communities, met with church groups and mayors and you know, schools. And I certainly, there's so much that I still need to learn about this district and the issues and opportunities. But I want to be an advocate for Alabama families in District 2. And also, as I mentioned earlier, too, I'll work with President Trump. I'm fully supportive of him. And we've got to get him back in the White House. And we need, in order to win this seat and then to, again, undo all the wrong of the Biden administration, we've got to be unified and we've got to have someone that's going to be working with President Trump instead of antagonizing him.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Caroline Dobson, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Awesome. All right, guys. Well, that's going to wrap up our regularly scheduled programming, but we do have an overtime segment where we're going to be diving into Alabama history. We were having a conversation about Albert Patterson out in the hallway. You've got a big plaque when you walk into the office that talks about the story of Albert Patterson. And Caroline kind of went through this whole Alabama history thing, and we thought that would make a great overtime segment. So in order for you guys to get that, though, you got to be signed up to as members. You can go to the website, 1819news.com. Up at the top, there's a button that says Become a Member. Click there. Membership start as little as $5 a month. With that, you get access to amazing overtime content like we're about to record, as well as cool things like our hats. We have the best hats. If I did a good Trump impression, I would say the greatest hats, but I'm not very good at the Trump impression. More than anything, though, you're supporting honest journalism in the state of Alabama. It's your citizen-supported news outlet. So please go do that, and until next time, put your trust in God and keep your powder dry.